I'm going to read an excerpt from Welcome to the Machine. And in this excerpt, I mention Max Weber. And Weber was one of the founders of psychology, along with Durkheim and Marx, really. And earlier in the book, this is what we said about Weber, that he brought psychology and social dynamics into his understanding of the nightmare that is this culture and class struggle. He knew that society isn't moved only by material forces, and that human motivation isn't only rational or instrumental, but that motivation is a mix of rationality, values, emotion, and habit. He saw how modern society emphasizes the rational, the instrumental, the means to achieve certain goals at the expense of everything else, including life itself. The narrowing of motivation in modern society has been fueled by the rise of bureaucracy and industrialization. Honing in, Weber saw that modern institutions, both public governments and private corporations, were becoming bureaucracies characterized by hierarchical authority, impersonality, rules, promotion by achievement, division of labor, and efficiency. So that's who Max Weber, that's not who Max Weber was. That's a little description of Max Weber. But his stuff is really worth reading. It's very important. So now on to the actual excerpt. The problem then, as Weber saw, is that rationalization, order, and alienation are inherent characteristics of bureaucracy and common to all forms of industrialization, socialist as well as capitalist. Quote, the apparatus, bureaucracy, with its peculiar impersonal character, is easily made to work for anybody who knows how to gain control over it. A rationally ordered system of officials continues to function smoothly after the enemy has occupied the area. He merely needs to change the top officials, end quote. Every conqueror knows this. Don't destroy the bureaucracies. Use them. That is, if you want to keep the machine running. Okay, now I'm going to step out of the excerpt for a minute and talk about something else, which is people sometimes ask me what I think was the most important invention of this culture, the most destructive machine. And I think by far it's not fire, it's not guns, it's not atomic weapons. I think the most important and destructive invention of this culture is the top-down hierarchical military style organization. It is that, the bureaucracy, which has allowed the dominant culture to kill, to conquer the planet. Anyway, back to the excerpt. It doesn't matter who runs the machine or even for what purpose. Quote, from a purely technical point of view, a bureaucracy is capable of attaining the highest degree of efficiency and is in this sense formally the most rational known means of exercising authority over human beings. It is superior to any other form in precision, in stability, in the stringency of its discipline, and in its reliability. It thus makes possible a particularly high degree of calculability of results for the heads of the organization and for those acting in relation to it. It is finally superior both in intensive efficiency and in the scope of its operations, and is formally capable of application to all kinds of administrative tasks, end quote. Do you want to put a human on the moon? Assemble a bureaucracy. How about eradicating Jews, Slavs, Roma, and other Untermenschen? Assemble a bureaucracy. Want to try to buy up land to protect it from being destroyed by industrial civilization? Assemble a bureaucracy. Want to try to dismantle the Panopticon? Assemble a bureaucracy. But it's not quite that simple. Bureaucracies, like other machines, are better at some things than others. Just as guns can't give birth and pesticides can't make plants, a bureaucracy cannot foster a vibrant community embedded in a thriving land base. Unfortunately for everyone and everything on Earth, machines, including bureaucratic machines, are better at destroying than nurturing, better at destroying than letting alone. Weber also saw the irrationality of rationalization, that it works against values, emotions, and happiness. He wrote, no machinery in the world functions so precisely as this apparatus of men and, moreover, so cheaply. Rational calculation reduces every worker to a cog in this bureaucratic machine, and seeing himself in this light, he will merely ask how to transform himself into a somewhat bigger cog. End quote. We too soon forget that we are not machines, that we are meant for something better than this. We search for rewards only within the system, having forgotten that there is a whole world waiting for us to remember that we are human beings and to drop out of and to destroy the machine and to rejoin the living world. Weber continued, quote, "It is horrible to think that the world could one day be filled with nothing but these little cogs, little men clinging to little jobs and striving toward bigger ones. This passion for your bureaucracy is enough to drive one to despair. It is as if in politics we were deliberately to become men who need order and nothing but order, become nervous and cowardly if for one moment this order wavers, and helpless if they are torn away from their total incorporation in it. That the world should know no men but these, it is such an evolution that we are already caught up in, and the great question is, therefore, not how we can promote and hasten it, but what can we oppose to this machine in order to keep a portion of mankind free from this parceling out of the soul, from the supreme mastery of the bureaucratic way of life," end quote. Weber held little hope that we would be able to oppose the inexorable grinding of the machine. He thought industrial bureaucracy was so efficient, so powerful, that it was inescapable. He wrote, quote, "The needs of mass administration make it today completely indispensable. The choice is only between bureaucracy and dilettantism in the field of administration," end quote. And remember, he was writing this a long time ago. He was writing this, he died in, I believe, 1920. It is so much worse today. Anyway, why is that? Quote, "The decisive reason for the advance of bureaucratic organization has always been its purely technical superiority over any other kind of organization. The fully developed bureaucratic mechanism compares with other organizations exactly as does the machine with the non-mechanical modes of organization," end quote. The result is that, as Weber states, without this form of social technology, the industrial countries could not have reached the heights of extravagance and wealth that they currently enjoy. All indications are that they will continue to grow in size and scope, end quote. Bureaucracies, it seems, are the gray goo that is eating the planet. Weber states, quote, "Precision, speed, unambiguity, knowledge of the files, continuity, discretion, unity, strict subordination, reduction of friction and of material and personal costs, these are raised to the optimum point in the strictly bureaucratic organization," end quote. This is all true whether your bureaucracy is killing Jews, trees, or rivers. It's true whether you're running a professional army or a professional baseball team. And the future? According to Weber, not summer's bloom lies ahead of us, but rather a polar night of icy darkness and hardness, no matter which group may triumph externally now, end quote. He also wrote, quote, "It is apparent that today we are proceeding toward an evolution which resembles the ancient kingdom of Egypt in every detail, except that it is built on other foundations, on technically more perfect, more rationalized, and therefore much more mechanized foundations. The problem which besets us now is not how can this evolution be changed, for that is impossible, but what will come of it," end quote. Indeed, what will come of us, and what will come of the living planet? Quote, "No one knows who will live in this cage in the future, or whether at the end of this tremendous development entirely new prophets will arise, or there will be a great rebirth of old ideas and ideals, or, if neither, mechanized petrification embellished with a sort of convulsive self-importance. For of this last stage of this cultural development, it might well be truly said, specialist without spirit, sensualist without heart, this nullity imagines that it has obtained a level of civilization never before achieved." In the end, Max Weber was hopeless. He saw the iron cage that our culture has become and found it, like Orwell in his 1984, inescapable. For some, in fact for most, the iron cage is more like an iron maiden. In the United States, one animal is killed in a vivisection lab every second. In Japan, it's one every other second. In Europe, one every 3 seconds. The scientists who torture and kill these creatures, for the most part, probably do not consciously hate animals, hate bodies, hate the natural. Yet they force-feed agrochemicals and Drano to dogs through tubes directly into their stomachs, and transplant the hearts and kidneys of pigs into the necks of baboons. They immobilize monkeys, lizards, cats, dogs, take off the tops of their heads. They break the necks of baboons, They addict macaques to cocaine, electroshock them if they will not use. They create superviruses that kill everyone they contact. They cut out portions of the brains of marmosets and leave these creatures as stupid as the experimenters themselves. They cut off the heads of live animals using scissors, then study their brains. They put live animals in freezers and let them try to claw their way out. They teach chimps American Sign Language, then put them in cages the size of cupboards. When the monkeys sign they want out, the scientists ignore their pleas, inject them with pesticides. They separate monkeys from their mothers, give them HIV, then put painful coils in their eyes to track where they look. Why? Ostensibly, at least, for knowledge, to understand how animals work, what makes them tick. Why? Ultimately, to further control and to further production. It is not only the scientists who presumably do not consciously hate animals, but also the managers who run their departments, the vice presidents and presidents and CEOs who run the corporations, the janitors who clean the floors and windows, the cooks who staff the cafeterias, the electricians who keep the lights on, the accountants who count the beans, the police who provide security for the buildings. Still, they all contribute to the torture of unimaginable numbers of animals. No, not to the torture of numbers, but to the torture of individuals who live in cages, are tortured, and then are killed or sacrificed, to use the language of the scientific priesthood. They may be numbers to those inside the machine, but to those most intimately involved, to those who live and die in agony, there are no numbers, only lives. And that is the point of the machine. Worldwide, approximately 214,000 acres of forest per day are destroyed. Most countries have already lost their vast majority of their natural forests, and rates of deforestation continue to rise, altered only briefly by the cycles of the global industrial economy. The people who cut down these trees do not, for the most part, at least consciously, hate trees, hate the wild, and we can say the same for their bosses and their bosses' bosses all the way up the line. Yet the forests continue to be killed. 90% of the large fish are gone from the oceans, with no realistic hope of respite for the survivors. Those who run the factory trawlers presumably do not consciously hate the oceans, and those who live in them, Captain Ahab aside, nor do their bosses' bosses, and so on. Last summer, this was written in 2003, I believe, last summer more than 19,000 people died in Europe from the hottest year on record, yet the articles about these deaths didn't even mention global warming. Do the corporate journalists consciously hate truth? And do their editors, publishers, and so on? We think not, with a few notable exceptions. Men and women in bureaucracies around the world do not torture. They do not deforest. They do not murder the oceans. They do not cause or ignore global warming. We merely push papers, attend meetings, do our jobs as well as we can, and then go home and try to relax with television or chemical assistance if necessary. The same was true in another Holocaust. As preeminent historian of the Holocaust, Raoul Hilberg commented, "It must be kept in mind that most of the participants of genocide did not fire rifles at Jewish children or pour gas into gas chambers. Most bureaucrats composed memoranda, drew up blueprints, talked on the telephone, and participated in conferences. They could destroy a whole people by sitting at their desk."